This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel. Our guests are Phoebe Marr and Shibley Talhami, who are answering the questions that you phoned into us about Iraq. And here's the next one.
My name is Catherine Hopps, and I live in Silver Spring. I wanted to know, what were the circumstances of our support for Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq war, including what weapons and financial assistance we provided, and how long we supported him?
Well, you know, I happen to know this scholar very well, but the issue on the policy toward Iraq, I mean, if we look back in the 1980s, really the policy of the United States of America was very specific, which was to prevent either Iran or Iraq from winning decisively during that war. The problem was, if one party wins decisively, then the U.S. will have to worry about the hegemony in the Gulf. So in the mid-1980s, it seemed as if Iran had the upper hand. And the U.S., in fact, the worst scenario for the U.S. was an Iranian victory, because at the time, Iran seemed to be the biggest enemy. So the U.S. moved to support Iraq for the very simple reason of trying to prevent an Iraqi defeat, not really expecting a major Iraqi victory. And during that period, it is clear that we had information on things like the use of chemical weapons against the Kurds in the late 80s. But those, again, went against our priority issues, which were seen to be national security issues. And not really until the year 1989, 1990, when Iraq was gearing up for war with Kuwait, and was actually, even though we didn't know it was doing that before, we knew that it was beginning at least a rhetorical campaign against the U.S., did we start worrying about Iraqi policies.
Phoebe Marr, anything that you would add about the U.S. relationship with Iraq during the Iran-Iraq war?
Well, as often the case with Iraq, we're faced not with a good decision versus a bad, but a very difficult decision about the lesser of two evils. We tilted to Iraq in that war because we didn't want Iraq overrun by Iran or any other foreign power, and that seemed to be the threat from around 1982 until the end of the war. And as Shibley said, it was not too long after that American public opinion and then finally the U.S. government did turn against Iraq because of its bellicose actions there in the Gulf.
Phoebe Marr, I want you to address this next question, which is about sanctions and Iraq.
My name is Eric Twachman. I live in Glastonbury, Connecticut. And I was wondering how much the sanctions have been hurting the Iraqi people. We're hearing all kinds of things about people starving, and I just wonder if you could address that question.
The sanctions have unquestionably hurt the Iraqi people. They've also, to a certain extent, hurt the regime as well. We shouldn't make such a clear distinction. But the impact of them, of course, has fell on the Iraqi people. Frankly, I think the extent of difficulty the Iraqi people has been overestimated through propaganda from the regime and the blame game. Who's to blame? The sanctions in the United States or Saddam?
But endorsed by other international groups, NGOs.
Yes, oh yes,
there
oh yes.
These
now, I would like to say, however, that right from the start of this, the West attempted to pass resolutions that would get relief to the Iraqi people, which were stopped by Saddam. And finally, we got a resolution, oil for food, that allowed Iraq to sell some oil in return for additional food and help. And one of the things I think you need to know is that since that time, those sanctions, smart sanctions, for example, have greatly expanded the amount of oil that Iraq is allowed to sell, and certainly more food has gotten in, and we're told that the malnutrition problem now has stopped. Of course, they need to recoup a lot of losses, and other things are getting in as well. Things are better in Iraq today
but
in
when
the last few years.
When you hear the claim made that, say, hundreds of thousands of Iraqi children have died because of the sanctions over the past decade, do you say yes, but it's been ameliorated, or these numbers are inflated and I can't accept that?
I say the numbers are inflated. I can't accept the numbers, but it's clear that there has been some malnutrition. It's just very difficult because we haven't got a truly independent outside group to go in and see how much it is.
Shibli Talhami.
There is no question that the prevailing perception in the region and much of the world is that the sanctions have been devastating on Iraq and the Iraqi people, and that they are to blame, not that the Iraqi government. We have lost that war of public opinion. It's not likely we'll turn it around. It is clear that that is the prevailing sentiment in the region.
Finally, many listeners called in with this question.
Hi, my name is Richard Whitekettle. I'm calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm wondering why, though a lot of people call Saddam Hussein Saddam, seems to me it's his first name, and I'm wondering if this is an effort to humiliate or demean him, if this is a custom either in the Iraqi world or the Arab world, or if this is to differentiate him from other Husseins in the area.
First, Phoebe Marr, why do we call Saddam Hussein Saddam?
Well, when a figure's been around a long time and there's a great deal of familiarity with him, my experience is Iraqis and others do tend to call him by their first name, certainly in talking about them and even writing about them. This is not to say that we haven't in the West demonized Saddam. I think it's very clear that we have, but this custom of calling him Saddam is one that fits comfortably in Iraq. For instance, during the old regime under the monarchy, many people referred to Nouri. You remember Nouri al-Sayed was the leading politician, and he was just frequently known as Nouri. Saddam himself, to his own population, likes to be thought of Ammi, my uncle, and so on. So there's an element of familiarity about it, and certainly it fits into my experience with local usage.
So you're saying it fits culturally, but in essence it's no different from calling Fidel Castro Fidel.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I mean, in Iraq, they do call him Saddam, and actually in rallies, they refer to him as Saddam. However, I mean, let's not forget that, in fact, this in our discourse, this is part of the personalization of the conflict right after the war. And clearly, this was a favorite thing for the first Bush administration to do. And in the style of newspapers in this country, when you look at how we refer to leaders, we often make an exception referring to him. Although you have to, some newspapers like the New York Times have been very consistent in terms of how they refer to Saddam Hussein.
Mr. Hussein on second reference.
That's right.
Thanks to both of you for answering so many questions from our listeners. Shibli Talhami, who is a professor of political science at the University of Maryland, and Phoebe Mark, a specialist on Iraq and a former professor at the National Defense University.